You're listening to Minimalish, a podcast where we talk about simplifying our stuff, our lives, our motherhood, all in a realistic way so that we can make room for what matters. We're not here for perfectly tidy homes or seeing how much we can possibly declutter. We're here for living with less. Realistically, it's going to look different for all of us, but we're not really focused on how our version of minimalism looks anyways. We're focused on how it feels. I'm your host, Desiree. I'm a mom to two and on my own journey of living with a little less clutter so I can have more space for an intentional life. I'm no expert, and I like to think of this as a corner of the internet where we're learning and growing together. So let's walk towards a more simple and intentional life. Here's this week's episode. Welcome back to Minimalish. Today's episode is a conversation that I was really honored to have. A few months ago, I got an email pitching Max Lucado as a guest for Minimalish. If you haven't heard of Max Lucado, he is the pastor of Oak Hills Church. He's an author. He's been dubbed America's pastor by Christianity Today, the best preacher in America by Reader's Digest, the Ted Lasso of pastors, I like that one, by the Dallas Morning News. He's written more than 40 adult nonfiction books, which stand alongside dozens and dozens of best-selling children's books, Bible studies, commentaries, and collections. And so when I saw his name pop up in my inbox, I had two immediate responses. One was that I was so excited. What an opportunity to have a conversation with such a wise person who has written so many books, has worked with people in his career as a successful pastor for a very long time, has been a speaker and author for many years, and I love the topic that was being pitched. How do we teach our kids about and help them cope with the feeling of loneliness? My second response when I saw his name in my inbox was one that I always have, and that is, I may want to have this conversation, but how does it fit for you, for the audience, for you who show up and listen in each week? Now, of course, I think that this topic is great for a podcast about intentional living and motherhood. The way that we approach these hard topics with our kids really matters. But although I share the same faith as my guest today, this is not a Christian podcast, and my beliefs and worldview are always going to be the lens in which I approach life. And I'll share that part of my life because it's part of intentional living for me. This podcast isn't a faith-based podcast, and I try to keep things neutral because you are welcome here regardless of your faith. I think we can all benefit from this topic of minimalism and intentional living regardless of our faith. And I have guests of various faith backgrounds on here, and I know their beliefs and worldview will always be a part of what they are sharing, just like my beliefs and worldview are always a part of what I'm sharing, whether it's just to inform their perspective and it's kind of in the background of their perspective and what they're talking about, or if they're outwardly sharing it. Either way, does that make sense? I don't know. But I guess I want you to know that I always overthink things when I'm inviting a guest on the show. And I think it has been a good result so far. And I just want you to feel welcome here, no matter your faith. So no matter what worldview our guest is sharing from, no matter what worldview I'm sharing from and what faith background we have, I hope that regardless if you agree with everything that they say or if you have the same beliefs or not, I hope that you can listen with an open mind and take the things that are relevant to you from any conversation we have on the show, take those things and leave what isn't relevant. I know that's how I approach any podcast I listen to, any book I read, and I hope that that's just how you approach any episode on this show, no matter what, even if I'm just like talking about decluttering your bathroom or talking about a deeper topic like we are today. Okay, so with that said, when I received Max's newest children's book, which is about loneliness, it's called In Case You Ever Feel Alone, I knew we were going to have this conversation. This had to happen because we love this book in my house. And it is just so meaningful, so beautiful. And then once I had this conversation with Max, I was even more excited to share this episode with you. Like I said, today we are talking about tough emotions, approaching situations where our kids are feeling those tough emotions, feeling lonely, why loneliness has become more and more prevalent in kids and adults, and what we can do as a family to stay connected, to make sure our kids know that they are not alone even when they feel lonely. I certainly was encouraged by this conversation in a lot of ways, but I was especially encouraged in my own parenting as I talked to Max, and I know you will be too. So let's jump in to my conversation with Max Lucado. Well, Max, I'm so excited to have you on the show today. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about who you are and what you do before we dive into our conversation?
Well, I'm the one who's excited. Thank you so much. My name is Max Lucado. I'm a pastor of a church. I've been here in San Antonio, Texas since 1988. So I just celebrated my 35th year at this church. Before that, I was in South America, and my wife and I lived in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil for 5 years. And then prior to that, I was in seminary and getting married and everything else. We have 3 children, and they're all grown, and they're all bringing kids themselves into the world. As we have 1, 2, 3, 4 grandchildren, and a 5th one about to be born. So it's a fun time for us.
That's wonderful. I am sure it's fun. I know at least my parents love being grandparents. They love kind of experiencing it all over again, but getting to be the fun
great.
One.
You know, everything they say about it is true. You know, you get all the fun and you don't have to do all the work.
Yeah.
We leave that up to you moms and dads.
Well, I'm excited to talk today because you just released your newest children's book, and it is on the topic of loneliness. It's called Just In Case You Ever Feel Alone. And we got this book and we absolutely love it in my house. My 6-year-old says it makes her happy cry. And I just love that she was even able to express that. But it's very interesting to see her like kind of wheels turning just about a really deeper topic, and mm-hmm. a topic that I think we don't necessarily often talk about with our kids. Could you tell us a little bit about why you wanted to write this book, why you see loneliness as an issue that we should be maybe concerned about as parents?
Yeah. You know, I mean, there's many, many reasons people write and read books. One of them is writers write children's books to help parents create a vocabulary or language with which they can discuss topics with their kids. So I'm very much aware that there's a loneliness epidemic taking place in the world. People are self-describing themselves as lonely to a higher degree than ever. One researcher said that 4 out of 5 adults are describing themselves as lonely, which is so ironic, right? We call ourselves the connected generation. I think we're more distracted than we are connected. So where does that leave, you know, a mom like you with a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old? Loneliness is a word that our kids don't banter about. It's not, they don't know how to express that emotion. But when you sit down with them and read a book, you know, this is just in case you ever feel alone. What you're doing is you're opening up a conversation with your child about that particular emotion. We could write, probably will write books just in case you ever feel afraid, or just in case you ever feel angry. You know, all these emotions that we have as grownups, we can help our children by giving them the language. Oh, okay. When you have that feeling, we call that loneliness. And you got to have a vocabulary. And then more than just create the vocabulary, create a strategy for dealing with that emotion. And that's the power and the beauty of books, is that it gives parents a tool that they can use to help their children surface these emotions and a strategy for dealing with them.
Yeah, that's exactly why we have loved the book so much. I mean, my daughter just really enjoys it, but I love how as you go through the book, it kind of gives different scenarios. And so they're starting to understand, okay, what does it mean to feel alone? Because they see these different scenarios that they have likely experienced before, and different feelings that maybe they know in their vocabulary and relating it to loneliness. And then, yeah, it every time after we read it, it always sparks the conversation. It always sparks, you know, me talking to her a little bit deeper about how when she does feel alone, which she mentions a lot that she misses me at school, and maybe she feels alone a little bit at school. And so I am able to talk to her about what she can do when she's feeling that. There's two things that you said that I want to go a little bit more into. The first one is, in your experience as a pastor and in your research that you did for this book and any other, I know you have many books, not just for kids, but any other book where you've approached this topic, can you talk about why loneliness is such an issue? You know, why it is such a problem in our connected, you know, as you said, our connected generation?
So loneliness is that emotion that says nobody cares. Nobody cares. You can feel lonely and be surrounded by people, you know, because we are. But loneliness says, I don't think anybody really cares about me. It's not just a feeling of I am alone, but nobody cares. Sometimes we like to be alone. You know, some of us really, it's good for us to have solitude time. But it's the feeling of nobody cares that I'm sick. Nobody cares that I have this test. Nobody cares that I don't have any friends. That can create a false narrative about life that begins to take on a life of its own. So if we can get back to the root of that and deal with that, which is actually an untruth, because yes, you may feel that nobody cares, but somebody does. Somebody does. And if you're a person of faith, you can with all confidence say, God cares about me and he knows me. And the scriptures are just replete with promises. Never will I leave you. Never will I forsake you. I'm with you always to the very end of the age. And we can, you know, we can camp right there on those promises of scripture. That even though we may feel like nobody cares, the truth is God does care. So dealing with that fruit by going all the way back to the root is really key when dealing with emotions.
Yeah, you know, I like that that's something that the book centers on. It, for our kids, it not only has us as their parents as kind of remembering that we'll be there, we'll be back, you know, if we have to leave them with for whatever reason, we'll return to them and they could think of us. But also it gives that same message that you just described, just sharing God's love with them as well. So
I just think it'd be okay if I just read a couple of pages so the listeners could have a sense.
That would be perfect.
The middle of the book here. Is your day full of sighing, and do you feel like crying, and are you tired of trying because nothing is going right? I care, and I'll be there, and my arms will squeeze you tight. And if I seem too busy, just tell me. I'll make the time to chat. No question is too big or small. You can count on me for that. And you know what? Even though I'm by your side, sitting right next to you, can you guess what's even better? God is right here too. He never sleeps or goes away. So if you feel alone, just remember, night or day, you're never on your own. So as these kind of words to our children, I think what's happening is we're creating a healthy worldview for them. An unhealthy worldview says, I'm all by myself. Nobody cares. I'm not as pretty as she is, or I'm not as fast as he is. And that toxic worldview, well, that creates trouble. What we're doing as we read stories like this to our children is we're creating a framework through which they can live life. We're creating a lens through which they can see life. And we can't just assume that they'll figure this out. It's beholden to us as parents to take the time to spend with them in one way or another, helping them to sort through these many feelings that come with life.
Yeah, that is such a beautifully written story. And I know when I read it too, I understand what my daughter says when she says it makes her like have happy cry, makes her want a happy cry, because I feel the same way as I read it to her, even more so as a parent, you know, just feel those emotions of just how much you love your kid. And then there's that message at the end that as we're reading about God's love to them, then I'm feeling like, wow, like how much I love my kids, how much more does he love my kids and us too.
Yeah. I think all of us are aware that the social media generation, that the more we are, I'm talking now mainly about teenagers or college age kids, the more the time they spend in social media, the more undeveloped communication skills go. I was at a fast food restaurant just a few days ago. In between appointments, I was by myself, went in, bought myself an unhealthy lunch, and I sat down and started eating. And here come four kids, all look to be college age. A couple of them were wearing shirts from a particular university here in San Antonio. And they sat down and each pulled out their phones as they were eating. And I don't think they said more than three or four sentences to one another. And that scene is repeated, right? Over and over and over. And you wonder what's going underdeveloped. What communication skills are going unexplored because we're spending so much time with this media, this social media. And I think one of the consequences is loneliness. You really can't get assurance or feelings of encouragement out of social media. In fact, the more we compare ourselves with others, the more insecure we feel. And so what's going underdeveloped are the abilities to express our feelings to someone else and listen to their feelings in return and feel that community that does deal with those feelings of isolation and loneliness. So I am very concerned. I mean, I don't want to be a naysayer, but I'm concerned. There are many benefits to this social media, but there are some downsides as well. So I'm encouraging parents to shepherd that part of their child's life. I don't know why children need to be on social media until they're 17 or 18 years of age. I know that puts me on the outside looking in with so many people, but it's a tough world. The minute we allow our children into the world of social media is the minute they stop being children. It's that profound of an impact.
Yeah, and I think there are more and more studies coming out that showing that that's true. And just technology in general is a topic that we've talked about on the podcast. We had a kind of almost a series on just the impact of it on parents, the impact of it on our families and connection and within our families in general, because it's not only a struggle for kids if they get into that world and yeah, absolutely. They are not, you know, probably ready for it until they're so much older. But it's also, it can be such a disconnect within the whole family if the parent, you know, technology can be addicting.
Addicted, for sure. I'm addicted. You know, I sit, there I am at a stoplight. I think, I'll pull my phone out right quick. How many times have we had to honk at the people in front of us because they don't see the light change because they're using that 30 seconds to check emails? I get it. I get a little buzz out of, you know, opening up my phone and seeing what alerts I received. And so it is something that we need to be careful about. And we need to just be honest about. And one of the fruits, the reason you and I are having this conversation about social media is that I think social media contributes to loneliness of teenagers, because part, those communication skills go underdeveloped, untapped, and they do not have the capacity to express their feelings one to another. And that part of life and communication needs to happen at a young age. And if we're robbing people of that, well, then the consequence is going to be an inability to express your feelings. And that then leads to this sense of, well, nobody cares about me. I can't, I'm all alone. So again, the book is just a tool to help parents deal with that at an early age.
The topic of finances in general can be a tricky one. And in the past, for me, just being honest, it has come with lack of knowledge. And when I've wanted to find someone to work with to help with financial planning, I've struggled to even know where to start because I wanted to find someone reliable and I didn't know where to look. And that's why I'm excited to share Fearless Finance with you. Fearless Finance is a convenient way to get financial advice without all the headaches, high fees, and commitments that come with traditional financial advisors. Fearless Finance's mission is to make advice affordable and accessible. You meet with your planner virtually, and they charge by the hour. You only pay for the time that you use, down to a quarter hour, and their planners meet you where you are on your financial journey. No judgment. If you do have a lack of knowledge, that is what they are there for. Plus, I love that it is a woman-owned company, and I love that all the meetings are virtual. Like I said, I just love that it makes it so flexible for a busy schedule. Whether you're looking to pay off student loans, buy a house, or you just want to make sure your finances are okay, they can answer your questions. No question is too small. No problem is too big. Visit fearlessfinance.com today. You can chat with a planner for free to make sure it's a good fit, and you'll get $50 off your first planning meeting when you use code MINIMALISH. That's fearlessfinance.com. Use code MINIMALISH for $50 off your first planning meeting. Well, one other thing that you mentioned earlier when we were talking is just having a strategy to help our children deal with loneliness or just be able to express it. And when they have those feelings of loneliness, be able to actually, I don't know, confront them and cope with them. And so I could think of one circumstance that is the first time I actively saw my oldest daughter feeling lonely. And we were at a park, and there was only one other group of kids there. They were around her age, and she was 5 at the time. And at first, the one other girl asked her to play with them. And then a few minutes later, she just said, "I want to play with my other friends now." And so they didn't really include her in the play, which they're no fault to the children. But my daughter kind of just sat on a bench, and she got a little bit of, you know, tears in her eyes, and mm-hmm. we left because I knew she was upset about something. And yeah. She said in the car, she said, "I guess I don't have any friends." And so that was the first time that I saw maybe a feeling of loneliness in her. So anyways, in a moment like that, or in a moment where we see our children maybe struggling with loneliness because of friendships or whatever it might be, I know it obviously differs per age, but what are some strategies that we can use mm-hmm. in those moments where we see our kids actively experiencing mm-hmm. loneliness?
Yeah. Boy, that scenario you just described is a scenario that every child goes through, and every scenario that every parent goes through. And there's no quick fix to that. The thing that we don't want to do as parents is dismiss it, is just say, "Oh, get over it," or "Don't feel that way. Don't feel that way." I don't like that phrase, because feelings, they're not right. They're not wrong. They're just feelings. Emotions can be created by the weather, by hormones, you know, by the mood of the people with whom we're eating or playing or walking. So let's don't tell our children, "Don't feel that way." That's not a, the best response. One response is to quickly say, I understand. I'm sorry, sweetie. I know you feel bad. All we're doing is affirming the presence of an emotion. We're not trying to grade it or judge it. We're just acknowledging this is an emotion. And so really the best place to start is with that acknowledgement. And then perhaps with a question, tell me why you think you feel that way. What is it that happened that made you feel that way? You may think you know the answer, but there may be more to the answer than what you've seen, and allowing the child to express themselves. And then I would think, depending upon how they respond, then we try to help them frame what just happened through a healthier worldview. I know you feel that way, honey, but you know what? I'm right here. I'm right here. Or your dad, he'll play with you. Let's call dad. You know, you create a solution to help them. Don't despair. Don't panic. Emotions are just emotions. Acknowledge what they are, and then help them as they learn to cope with those emotions by creating a strategy. Did I meander too much in that answer?
No, that was great. I think it's helpful because it's really a simple response that we can kind of take and cater to the situation. The idea of affirming the feelings first and then allowing them to explore those feelings further, and then giving them not necessarily that it's a solution, but like you said, a strategy, or just reframing through a truer lens.
Yeah. You know, I'm a pastor, I'm not a therapist, but I have a little tool in my brain always when people come to talk to me about their problems. I really try to look for the root that's creating the fruit. The fruit could be a variety of things. Anxiety could be prejudiced. It could be just a negative outlook on life. So we have this fruit, and the temptation is just to deal with that fruit. But I have found if I can go back in their life or go back in their story, go a little bit deeper and say, what do you think causes you to live with this level of anxiety? And let's explore together where it comes from. And it could be a variety of things there. But when you deal with the root rather than just talking about the fruit, and I know I'm just sound like I'm just using words that rhyme, but my brain needs that. And yeah, we can do the same with children, you know, go try to discern what it is. What's the root here that's causing this to happen? You know, if kids fight all the time, you know, siblings are going to argue all the time. But if there's a season in which they're just snapping at each other, or yelling at each other, or fighting all the time, well, something's going on. Something's going on. Maybe it's something at school. Maybe it's something with the kids in the neighborhood, or maybe they're doing something that they feel guilty about. And if you can get behind just that behavior and get behind it and deal with the cause of it, then you're really going to help them make progress.
Yeah, I love that. And I think, you know, like you said, the rhyming part of it helps it stick in our brains. I mentioned just like kind of a scenario where I saw a little bit of loneliness in my child. Do you have any other like signs of loneliness that you can share that might be, I don't know, red flags that we can kind of pick up on as parents?
That's a really good question. You know, loneliness can manifest itself in... Okay, so again, if loneliness truly is this feeling that nobody cares about me, not just that there's no one physically present, but nobody cares about me, that then will cascade into emotions of insecurity. It could cascade into emotions of anger. You know, why does everybody have a friend and I don't? And it could, often it will display itself in a spirit of sullenness, just kind of sadness and sorrow. So we can, as parents, be on the lookout for anger, for sullenness, for sadness, for sorrow. But imagine how you feel if you've come to the conclusion, well, nobody really cares about me. Again, that's loneliness. How do you behave when you have that thought going on in your head? And look for the manifestation of it as it appears in the life of your child. Again, it could display itself in a variety of things. But what you're hoping to do is have the opportunity to convince the child otherwise. I know you feel like nobody cares. You affirm that. I know you feel, but can you and I go, let's go talk about it. And then genuinely care about them, care about them. The quickest way to convince them that somebody cares is to care. And so spending time with them will do wonders for that attitude.
Yeah, and I see it in both of my kids, even though one of them is so young, she's only 2 years old, but I can see in both of them that quality time just goes such a long way, and being present with them, and you know, my 6 year old, sometimes she wants to play with her friends instead of me, but even so, you know, we're at home all day. If I'm actively choosing to, oh, okay, let's bake something together versus we're just home and there's nothing going on.
Some kind of creative activity together. It's just beautiful. It is. And and quality time happens as a result of quantity time. You know, you can't say, okay, honey, I've got 5 minutes. We're going to have really quality time. You can't do that with a 6 year old, you know. But you've got to block out time just to hang out together. And then through that, you know, time that you have, you may have 3 or 4 minutes that's truly quality, in which you're talking about something that's deep or meaningful, at least to you. But don't think you can force it. So just do your best. And I know this is hard because we're all so busy, and I know we work a lot of hours. I get it. Not trying to make parents feel guilty. Please forgive me if I'm leaving that impression. But what I'm saying is every minute you can invest in the life of that child will pay off great benefits. And even if it means, you know, not taking a promotion or not living in a bigger house or not driving a fancy car or not buying them those tennis shoes that everybody else wears, you know, what matters most is spending that time with them. And that will then create time that's truly quality.
Yeah. Well, that encouragement right there is really a big heart of what we talk about on Minimalish, because we talk a lot about just getting clear on our values and what matters most. And, you know, a lot of times the stuff of a bigger house or, you know, whatever we're trying to acquire, like material things to maybe make ourselves feel valuable, those things are not really the things that truly matter. And it's not that it's okay to have stuff, but yeah, if it's taking away, like if the pursuit of stuff is taking away from what truly matters to us, then what's really the purpose of that? I love that you mentioned like quantity of time too. And I think, like you said, someone hearing that can be like, how is that going to happen? Like, I do have to work, even if it's not for the bigger house, you know? And I think of that too. Luckily, I do get to work from home and stay home with my youngest. But, you know, now that my oldest is in school, it feels like we have a lot less time together. But I think about the difference of just if we're on the car ride to school together and we're talking versus if we're on the car ride to school together and I am just distracted about something else and brushing off her questions, and or if we're at home sitting on the couch together and I'm sitting there with her, we're reading a book or we're, I don't know, thinking about what to do next versus if I am just scrolling on my phone, she's on her iPad or whatever it might look like. You know, there's a difference in the way that we can find that quality of time in pockets, or the quantity, sorry. There's a different, I think we can find that quantity of time in the pockets of our day, even if we are busy.
Great point. Great point. You know, time around the table is just precious, right? Whether it be breakfast, whether it be dinner, even lunch, if we can find that time in which we gather the whole family around the table, turn off the television, no phones, of course, allowed during dinner, create those moments. That's huge. And I would quickly add that mom and dad, we need to make time for one another. You know, we need to, I need to do it. I've been married 42 and a half years, and I'll come home and I'll realize I've been home for an hour and all I did was say hello to Dylan, and I got involved in some activity and I didn't ask her about her day. And so it's something that I could do better. But creating those opportunities for quality conversations is really essential to have a healthy family.
Yeah. And it's not easy because, yeah, we are tired. We get home from a long day of work or whatever else is taking up all of our time, and we're tired. But I think just having it in the front of our mind as, well, this is a goal of mine, this is a priority, it's going to make more opportunities for it to happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And our kids will pick up on it, you know, when mom and dad make time for each other and they talk sincerely to one another and respectfully to one another and express their love, children pick up on that. And that creates number one, you're modeling that for your kids. And then number two, they're going to feel a sense of security that mom and dad do care about each other and this home is a safe place.
Yeah. If someone is listening and they're like, okay, I've gotten so many good little nuggets from this conversation that I want to take and bring into my life, if there's just one action step that you would encourage a parent to take just to kind of be proactive in making their child feel connected to them, at least, so that when they do experience loneliness, they have that to lean back on. Just kind of one action step for a parent to take right now to just continue to create more of a connected environment within their family, even if it's something we already talked about, just to kind of leave us with one action step.
Yeah, I would say create that evening routine where the last voice they hear is your voice. Let them go to bed having heard you pray for them, love them. Let them go to sleep having heard mom and dad say, we care for you and we're here, you rest well. And those words of affirmation. For many of us, it's a story time. That's what I did with my kids. All of my books came out of stories I made up for my kids. A story time is just precious. It's just precious. And I used to make me want to pull my hair out because so many people would say, now that you're not, it's going to go fast. That time with them as children, it's going to go fast. But you know what I catch myself telling people now? It's going to go fast. And you know this, it just, time takes on wings and flies away. So you've got to make some tough decisions when they're young. You're going to have plenty of time later for whatever that activity is taking up so much of your time. Sacrifice that for now. Maybe sacrifice, like we talked about, buying something new or bigger, faster, or more colorful. What matters now are those kids. Right now, they're wide open to you. Their heart is fertile soil. Sow seeds in their hearts while you can. So, long answer, but the short answer to my long answer, make an evening routine that is healthy with your kids.
That's such a good one. Our bedtime routine, while it can be very long some nights, I think, how did bedtime just take over an hour? It is one of the best times of the day because we are just kind of slowing down together, and we always do. We read before bedtime and then pray as well. And yeah, it's simple, but it matters so much. So that's just such a great tip. I've loved our conversation, and I'm just really grateful for the wisdom that you shared today. I'm really grateful for your book because my daughter and I both love it, and we read it often. Before you go, I have two questions that I like to ask each guest, kind of just for fun. And the first one is, what is something in your life that you're simplifying right now?
Travel. I don't do nearly the travel. When my children were small, I got off the road entirely. When they got, you know, college age, I started doing more travel. And in that sense, the pandemic was good for me. It taught me that I don't have to be on the go to still be productive. And so I found myself dialing the travel back, and I've enjoyed being at home a lot more.
I love that. Well, the last question that I have is, what is something that you are loving right now?
We've discovered, my wife and I, that evenings watching good television is a delight. And we have discovered a lot of really good shows on PBS, like The Midwife. There's a story about The Midwife. We just finished one, The Durrells in Kofu. They're not deep. And I say this in a positive way. They're genuinely entertaining. And by the end of the day, my brain is usually tired anyway. And so we just enjoy. She has her couch and I have my lazy boy, and we sit down and it's an earlier evening than we used to have. But we really enjoy that time together.
I love that. My husband and I connect over a good show as well. Thank you so much again. Right before you go, where can listeners go to find more of your books and everything else?
Well, any place that sells books, primarily CBD or Amazon or maxlocato.com or any bookstore, my stuff is, you won't have any trouble finding it.
Great. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. Great to talk to you. Hug that 6-year-old for me.
I will.
And the 2-year-old.
I will. I hope you enjoyed this conversation. One thing I loved about this conversation is it really got me thinking through the routines in my daily life and how I prioritize connection with my kids within those routines. You know, sometimes as parents, we are just tired and we are busy, and whatever it might be that keeps us from connection with our kids. But I do really think that, like Max and I were talking about, both quantity and quality of time are so important, and that's going to look different from family to family. But I hope you kind of sit with that question and just think about, like, well, what would quantity of time look like? What is realistic for us? How do we spend more time together, more intentional time together? And maybe it doesn't always look like absolute focus time, like doing a game night or reading books together or whatever. Like, quantity of time can't be always focused on those things. But quantity time together, to me, is more so just being open to the opportunities for deeper connection that pop up in our daily lives when we do have that time where we're just doing life together. Not being so distracted, not being so feeling so rushed through life that I miss those opportunities. I hope you leave this episode feeling encouraged. If you enjoyed it, I hope you will share it with a friend. You could text it to them. You could share it on social media or wherever you like to share things. I am grateful for you. Thank you for being here. And just a reminder that our April book club is starting very soon over in the Minimalish Collective. We are reading Organizing for the Rest of Us by Dana K. White. So you can head to patreon.com/minimalish to find out more info about that. And I will talk to you right back here again on the next episode.
Hi there. I'm Rachel, and I'm the host of 3 in 30 Takeaways for Moms, a podcast for women who want to love motherhood as much as they love their children. In each 30-minute episode, my guests and I give 3 actionable takeaways that will help you make your family life a little better each week. I'd love for you to give us a listen. Listen to 3 in 30 Takeaways for Moms on the iHeart app or wherever you get your podcasts.